Welcome to the Ganjapreneur.com podcast. My name is Shango Los, and I will be your host today. Kristen Nevdahl is director of the Patient Focus Certification Program from Americans for Safe Access. Before joining ASA, she co-founded and is presently vice chair of the Emerald Growers Association in Humboldt County, whose mission is to promote the medicinal, environmental, social, and economic benefits of lawfully cultivated cannabis in California by advocating for public policies that foster a healthy and sustainable cannabis industry. As chair of the American Herbal Products Association Cannabis Committee's Cultivation Working Group, Kristen assisted in the development of cannabis cultivation model regulations and best practices for agency consideration. Kristen is also an instructor at Oaksterdam University, teaching classes on environmental sustainability and best management practices. Kristen's broad policy and advocacy experience also includes serving as a board member for the Coalition for Cannabis Policy Reform, California's to Regulate Medical Marijuana, Americans for Safe Access's Patient-Focused Certification Program, and the 420 Archives. Welcome, Kristen. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
First, let's talk about Americans for Safe Access, and then after a while, we'll talk a little bit about Humboldt County specifically.
Sounds great.
So what was the motivation for Americans for Safe Access to establish the Patient Focus Certification, and how was it developed?
So the motivation had a lot to do with bringing product safety protocols into the medical marketplace, and also establishing cannabis as a botanical medicine as opposed to moving it into more of a pharmaceutical realm. So our executive director at Americans for Safe Access, Steph Scher, had this great plan and facilitated this partnership with the American Herbal Products Association and the American Herbal Pharmacopeia, which allowed us to work within the botanical industry and with cannabis experts to create guidelines that were modeled after what we see being used and approved by the FDA today for botanical and nutraceutical products in the U.S.
So do you see it as this is a precursor for it to move towards pharmaceutical, or is the intention to hold it firmly in the herbal realm?
It's to hold it firmly in the herbal realm, and this is largely, I think, part of the motivation here, right, is to keep this plant as a botanical medicine. We know that there's going to be kind of spin-offs or side development in the pharmaceutical realm, but cannabis as a whole plant medicine has advantages that we're never going to see happen in the pharmaceutical realm, right? So this program acts to kind of anchor the plant itself as a botanical or nutraceutical product for the future. And a second huge component to this is that when we look at the history of botanical medicine in the U.S., right, in the late 70s, early 80s, as the botanical and nutraceutical market really exploded in the U.S., there weren't guidelines in place for this market. So companies started to get into trouble with product liability because they didn't have product safety protocols, they didn't have proper labeling protocols, and it really took down some of the larger companies that were developing. But secondly, it created a pathway or an incentive for the FDA to really try to remove our ability to have botanical and nutraceutical products over the counter. Mm-hmm. And there is some fear that we could see the same thing happen with cannabis. So learning from what, you know, similar products have had or experienced, mm-hmm. Is really, I think, what kind of launched the merger and the partnerships for ASA, APA, and the AHP.
So specifically with the patient-focused certification, explain to me a little bit about the standards and what that means to earn that certification.
Right. So back in 2010, this partnership developed, and these working groups were housed largely within the American Herbal Products Association, and they were a combination of botanical experts, and industry, cannabis industry experts from all over the country. About 90 companies joined, a few from Canada. We had some input from the Netherlands. And what we did is we developed these recommendations to regulators that actually created sensible pathways for policy development, but also best operating practices for everything from cultivation and processing to manufacturing, labeling, packaging, and holding, also for distribution, and then for laboratory testing facilities. And the American Herbal Pharmacopoeia developed the cannabis monograph, which really focused on quality, purity, and testing methodologies. Also, what kind of contaminants or adulterants might not be suitable and at what levels, right, for human consumption. Coming into that program or coming into the patient-focused certification program as a certified company means that you're compliant with local and state regulations, that you also have these product safety protocols in place. So you have written standard operating practices, right, or SOPs. You have employee manuals. Your employees are well-educated and trained. And that you're using appropriate tracking procedures, right? You're using lot and batch number tracking. You are properly labeling and identifying the parts of the plant that are being used in the products you're making and developing, and that you can do a product safety recall should you have to at any time, you know, in a product's lifespan, right?
It's interesting because here in Washington, to become certified as a lab, for example, you don't have to prove proficiency, just you have to do enough for the certification. It sounds like this added layer of the patient-focused certification adds more of a confidence in the proficiency of whoever the certified person might be.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have two labs here in Washington that are patient-focused certified. We have both PhytoLab and the Workshop. And that's great because they're testing both adult use medicine and, well, adult use cannabis, I should say, and medical marijuana or medical cannabis for patients here in Washington. They've gone through a rigid audit, or rigorous audit, I guess we should say, which verifies both their standard operating procedures, their employee handbooks, but also the methodologies that they're using on site with the products and the raw cannabis that they're testing. So, it's likely, or I think more likely, that they're going to be a very consistent sort of result coming out of those facilities. So it's a standardized, suddenly they're a standardized lab, right? It provides a standard for testing, a standard methodology, and the machines are calibrated to a standard. So, it really is a game changer with standardizing medicine here.
With the adoption of medical cannabis across the country being ahead of the recreational legalization, are you finding that the certification is being adopted all across the country?
Well, it's the guidelines that we're really seeing being adopted. So many states have taken the American Herbal Product Association's recommendations to regulators in the four categories we just mentioned, and they're adopting them as regulatory policy. We see a good portion of that work be included in Illinois' law or regulations, Maryland's regulations, Nevada's regulations, and they're spreading. So that's, I think, really reassuring. These are very sensible recommendations for regulations. But we're also seeing the American Herbal Pharmacopoeia, the cannabis monograph, be referenced for laboratory testing facilities, even in 502. So portions of the AHP monograph are referenced in I-502's law. We also see them referenced in Oregon, again in Maryland, again in Illinois, and in multiple states. So I think we're really moving towards more of a standardized product and a standardized testing regimen for these products.
I can imagine that the legislators who are trying to figure this out in their home states are probably pretty grateful that you have put in the time to make these recommendations first so that they can just kind of grab what you have built and use that as a starting place instead of reinventing the wheel at each state level.
Right, and reinventing the wheel, I think, because of so many decades of prohibition, is what regulators tend to do. So yeah, I think these have been very, very helpful. And really what these do is they look at cannabis again like a botanical product. So cultivation, say, those recommendations are treating it like a crop that's produced for human consumption. And so we're taking those considerations into account in the regulatory framework that was developed. And then these by no means recreate the wheel, right? They put cannabis in the botanical realm. They treat it like a crop that's produced for human consumption. They look at how Department of Agriculture would work with it at that level. They look at what kind of processing would be required if it was echinacea or any other crop, right? What kind of protocols would be in place for that, or zonings might be in place or required for that. And then they do the same with manufacturing all the way up to distribution and then laboratory testing. So it's really not a reinvention of any wheel. It's just putting cannabis into its place as a botanical or herbal product.
Finding an appropriate framework for follow.
With minimal adoptions. Mm-hmm. So,
with some states beginning to blend medical and recreational, like we're doing here in Washington, what role do you see for the patient-centered focus certification in the merging of medical and recreational markets?
Well, I think that, you know, what we're seeing happen is not, I mean, still states and legislators and regulators are struggling with the product safety components, right? And we're really hoping that patient-focused certification can act as a tool or a framework to bring better product safety and standardization into these already existing regulatory models. And also, you know, in Washington, we have this sticky situation where the medical marijuana providers really have no legal protections. As far as licensing or permitting is concerned, and because of that, they've kind of been the brunt of a lot of misunderstanding. So we're really hoping to see these providers move into certification, because then we can show that they actually have, right now, much better standards of production, processing, manufacturing, distribution than what the I-502 stores have. And a lot of them have spent years and years developing very good protocols that they're using to create very high quality products for patients. So this program offers an opportunity for them to really show that through an audit and a certification process.
That's great. It sounds like one of the first standards that can really truly have medical self-regulate, because in a lot of cases, self-regulation is more an ideal than what's mm-hmm. actually happening. And so it sounds like the certification can create a standard where we can actually more effectively self-regulate.
Right, and show some level of compliance, right? When you're in a situation like Washington, California is in a very similar situation where we have providers that, you know, don't have clear pathways to licensing or permitting. It's very challenging to show that you're operating in compliance as well. So patient-focused certification, you know, allows these facilities to show a level of compliance with local and state regulations, as well as this higher level of standard of care, standard of production, that I think is very important. And patients rely on it. You know, patients are getting, by and far, you know, for the most part, they're getting really excellent care from a majority of their providers. So it would be a shame to really lose that for patients. And we're hoping we can, you know, help organize and keep the patient providers that have put so much into, you know, being available for these patients here. We're hoping we can keep them at the table as this merger or legislation develops here.
There's a lot of experience that we don't want to lose by over-regulating and pushing these folks out.
And products, right? Experience and products that patients are relying on, right? So we haven't seen that same development happen yet in I-502 in the adult use marketplace. And of course it's new, right? That marketplace is new. It's developing. It's had its hiccups, right, as a new, evolved, regulated marketplace. And to lose the expertise and the years of work and the product development that these patients have become reliant on would really be a setback for patients, let alone for the businesses and the folks who have put their life into this. But the patients would lose out quite a bit.
And that's why you call it patient focus certification.
Yeah, exactly.
Before we move on to talk about Humboldt County, how can our listeners find out more about ASA and the certification?
Oh, it's really easy. So visiting the Americans for Safe Access website, which is at safeaccessnow.org, you can do both. You can learn all about Americans for Safe Access through that website, and you can also link directly to the patient-focused certification website, or you can go directly to the patient-focused certification website by just going to patientfocuscertification.org. It's really long, but very simple. If you can remember the name of the certification program, you can remember the website. And I encourage folks to fill out applications on the website. They're very easy. They don't come with a commitment to certify, but it does allow us to open up a conversation with a company or a provider about how to move into a certified framework.
Well, that's great. So you are also well known as a co-founder and key member of the Emerald Growers Association in Humboldt, and you're presently the co-chair. What advantages do you see for growers across the country to come together similarly and form local cannabis trade organizations?
Well, I think, you know, Humboldt County is, it has this unique history of generations and generations of growers. And when we formed what originally started as Humboldt Growers Association back in 2010, it was really kind of because we were seeing Prop 19 happen in California and the city of Oakland make a move to only allow for 4 very large cultivation sites, and all of Alameda County's patients would have had to get medicine only from one of those 4 cultivation sites. And there was a sense of panic, right? This is kind of an economic backbone for Humboldt County, and we formed during a time where our community literally was freaking out and wondering what happens after cannabis. And our goal was to make sure that we didn't lose these small farms that have been providing, you know, since 1997, I think, is when Proposition 215 passed. So I guess it was 98 because it was a proposition. So 1998, Proposition 215 passes, and we were suddenly moving into 2010, and we had, you know, what was that, 10 years of even more of providers that were suddenly going to be shut out of the market, right? Kind of similar to here right now with what you're dealing with in lieu of the I-502 and the merging. And our community felt so strong about holding on to that family, sustainable, small farm that we literally formed in a living room. A bunch of friends and community members who were somewhat in a panic, right? We decided that we were going to get together and we were going to use kind of safety in numbers kind of methodology to influence local regulations. And we really started to try to influence Humboldt County into creating a permitting system that allowed farmers to be have kind of a legal framework to operate in. We suddenly quickly learned in California that we really needed to also focus on what was happening on a statewide level. And we weren't the only group of farmers organizing. Mendocino was doing the same thing. So suddenly, Mendocino, our neighbor to the south, Humboldt Growers Association is bumping into Mendo Grown, and the two groups started working together, and I joined the Mendo Grown board. And after a couple years of playing phone between the two boards, we decided that really what we needed to do was merge, and we needed to bring more farmers in from more areas of California and become a statewide organization that could really hopefully have a very strong voice to affect change in the capital. Because what we realized we needed was statewide regulations to help fix the problem, and that the local powers that be were not really going to be able to fix the problems.
And are you finding that this combined group has got a lot more influence because of all the additional sweat equity brought together as one?
Oh, absolutely. And what it does is it creates a unified voice, right? So instead of having Humboldt County be in the Capitol talking about what farmers need, and Mendocino be in the Capitol talking about what farmers need, and Butte County or Yuba or Monterey, we now have this cohesion, right? So it's a lot easier, I think, for our legislators to hear the needs of a large group when it's coming from one organization and one voice, right? So we've really kind of expanded our board to allow for regional representation. Our executive director, Hezekiah Allen, is amazing and travels through all of these counties all over the state and meets with our local chapters on a regular basis. And we do regular telephone calls. So talking, we do a legislative committee, we have a membership committee, we have a marketing and development committee, we have an environmental committee. And we bring, and it's great for us because we bring all of this information together from all over the state, and then we understand better what kind of programs we need to develop to help move sustainability forward. We're much more effective in getting those messages out because we can share them now in, I think we're in like 15 counties right now throughout California, so we're sharing these messages about best practices and sustainability at a much broader level than when we started. And that really is changing a larger conversation about cultivation. You know, in California, we've been pretty well hammered with environmental issues because of the trespass grow situation on public lands and large private holdings, timber holdings especially. And it's been very hard for viewers of the media to understand that that's not our medical cannabis providers, right? So having the broader base, the larger area of conversation, I think has really helped to change and educate also the public about the difference between medical and trespass, right? Trespass is never going to be legal. And we have these medical providers that are doing everything they can do to be compliant and good stewards of the land. And when we share that message outside of Humboldt County in a grassroots way, we really get to educate much more on a much more profound level.
Yeah, certainly. So Prohibition-era growers have worked in secret for years, and sometimes there are some challenges to growers sharing information and coming together after all the secrecy, you know? What techniques does the Emerald Growers Association use to help lessen competition and suspicion amongst member growers that might be useful to others across the country who are forming their own similar groups?
Well, I think that, you know, when we have leadership in all of these various communities, that leadership is often trusted by their peers. And that has been really a great way for us to expand because as we identify folks, say, in Butte County that really want to engage and have a similar mission to move sensible regulation forward, and you know, we're dealing with a plethora of bans, like patchwork bans for cultivation all over California. One ban, you know, over here on the eastern side of the state ripples throughout the entire state, and it shows communities next door that, oh, we can ban this as opposed to having to deal with it. So really getting strong leadership in each of these regions has helped tremendously because the community leaders are who the local community is most likely to engage with and talk to and rally around and feel safe with. So that's really been a huge change and advance for us. That's done a lot of good.
So it sounds like you're addressing the suspicion that sometimes comes with Prohibition-era growers by distributing the leadership, and even though you have a central organization, the decision-making isn't necessarily as centralized so that everyone feels like they are being considered in the whole.
Yeah, I mean, we invite our members to committee calls. We invite them to engage, and we want them to engage. I mean, I'm here in Seattle today and tomorrow, and then Saturday we're hosting a brunch to talk about board updates. So that will be in Humboldt County. We'll be doing a brunch. It's free to board. It's free to our members. It's a $25 charge to non-members, but all are welcome to come in and hear what it is that we're working on. What our educational programs look like right now, what our legislative strategy looks like, and I'm going to talk a little bit about the trends in cultivation policy throughout the U.S. And you know, we'll do the same thing on Sunday in Mendocino, and then we'll be out doing a very similar program in the eastern part of the state in March, and then again in April, and then we'll be headed south. So it's really inviting the community in, members and non-members, to have the conversation, right? And we do a lot of radio. Radio is really great for having the conversation, and we try to encourage folks to call in when we have that opportunity, and that's somewhat anonymous, right? And folks will email us, too, or, you know, send us notes. So it's a great way to kind of reach out and communicate. We're just trying to hold as many events as possible, get people as engaged as possible, and have them really working with their local legislators, right, their supervisors, their city council members, to educate them about the fact that this is a crop just like any other crop that's produced for human consumption. It can easily be regulated like agriculture. We can dispel all of these myths about it being this big, scary, environmentally unfriendly endeavor. So we just keep pushing in that same direction.
When you were talking about the different meetings at the different local levels, I got another picture of another agriculture group. It sounds a lot like the old Grange that my grandfather used to be a member of. This is, in a way, you're making a modern cannabis Grange where people can come together and discuss what's going on in their agriculture area and also have social and trade best practices.
Yeah, and I think that's a great analogy, right? And even in some areas, we use a lot of the local Granges because they're friendly and the spaces are there and they're great community meeting centers. So yeah, it is. It's very similar to that. And, you know, in California, we're really also pushing hard for appellation control. You know, these farmers have been working in their regions, in some cases, for multiple generations. And they've developed strains and that are very unique to their region, that even if I take something from the eastern part of the state and I bring it over to a coastal part of the state, that plant is going to look different, it's going to taste different, it's going to, you know, just
because of being in a different bioregion.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. So we're really hoping to kind of honor, right, this rich tradition of cultivation and see the state recognize the appellations just like we have with wine, because this is a very, very similar dynamic happening here with the environmental influences on cannabis. So I think that's another incentive for these regions to engage. It offers an opportunity as we work together to brand all of the wisdom and the years of hard work that have gone into, you know, developing these areas. In a lot of these rural communities, right, cannabis inadvertently has kept these communities economically stable. It's built schools, fire departments, community centers, right, and kept things moving forward. I think it's time we honor that. Right.
Well, let's talk a little bit about those community centers and such. So what is the relationship between the trade group itself and the community at large? And how do the local residents who are not cannabis enthusiasts respond to the group generally?
Well, you know, it's changing. I have to say, when we started in 2010, folks weren't really sure what to make of a medical cannabis trade association that was focused on cultivation and sustainability and best management practices. And, you know, my little joke is that growers, farmers, cannabis farmers, kind of tend to be like ostriches, right? They put their head in the sand because, you know, in our area, a lot of them moved into Humboldt, into these rural regions of California because they were part of the back to the land movement. They were getting away from the man. They didn't want to be part of government control and regulations. So flash forward to 2010, and suddenly there's a trade association saying, we need to regulate, and we need to, you know, self-regulate and help guide regulations as they develop. And there definitely was some resistance. I mean, there was some pretty hefty resistance. And, you know, over the years, our trade association, our board, is largely comprised of community members. So over the years, I think giving back to the community, putting out free best management practice manuals, hosting events, working with different different legislators in our community, we've seen some of that fear or uneasiness fall away. And we've also done a lot of work to engage other groups in our community, so environmental groups, create coalitions, so we aren't standing out there alone. We're partnered. Mm-hmm. We're moving things forward in coalition. And I think that has really helped the Trade Association, Emerald Growers Association, to be more well-received in the community. And politically, times are changing, right? So the entire political environment from 2010 to today is a completely different setting. When we started in 2010, there was kind of a rush of organizing, right? People were still uneasy, growers were nervous, and rightfully so, right? I'm afraid to sign on to a trade association, we would hear, because then my name's on a list as a grower. And we got a lot of that. And of course, so how could we not have? We saw then in 2011, the U.S. attorneys in California come out with guns a-blazing, literally, you know, they're going to shut down every medical marijuana facility. And suddenly, people who wanted to be engaged were horrified. And we kind of had this lull. The political climate said, wow, I should go back to my homestead and be afraid. And that's, you know, that's what people did. And I totally understand that. But now, after Washington and Colorado legalized, and we're seeing, you know, more and more states, more than half of the U.S. has medical marijuana laws or medical cannabis laws on the books, right? People are saying, like, oh, goodness, we really need to be focused on this. And so we're seeing another resurgence, I would say, of organizing and farmers wanting to be engaged and wanting to secure their future.
Yeah.
And the way to do that really is to look at becoming part of the solution, engaging, you know, bringing your voice to the table. So.
And Humboldt does have quite a voice. Humboldt is seen as the holy land to most cannabis enthusiasts across the country and, I guess, the world. So how do you think it influences the growers in Humboldt County to be seen as pioneers in the eyes of growers and patients all over?
I think it's a mixed bag, right? So Humboldt County growers really would like to be on the forefront of sensible regulation. They want regulation that's going to embrace their way of life, that's going to embrace the farms that they've developed, that's going to let them, you know, operate in a manner that doesn't create a lot of their craft farmers, right? And their heritage and craft farmers versus, say, a kind of a Budweiser type, right, of regulation. So the concern there is really making sure that we don't have these overly onerous regulations that in every case, the expense and the rigidness of onerous regulations tend to crush small businesses. And Humboldt is the land of small business, small farming. So they're inspired to see that happen. They're working hard on that. And at the same time, that pressure that, you know, being the holy land or the epicenter of sun-grown cultivation and cultivation as a whole, it puts a lot of pressure on, right?
Yeah.
Because not only do people look at Humboldt and they say, oh, look, all of this great development has happened, but every time we have a blow it, right, the microscope is on us, and it's really hard to not have that be a big message as well. So for example, with the trespass grows, I mean, our forests have been rife with them. It's been really hard on our environment. And it's been hard, like I mentioned earlier, to separate that message that these trespass grows are not your medical cannabis providers. They are not our Emerald Growers Association members, right? It's a completely different conversation that we're having. That's been a challenge that I feel like we're overcoming finally, but, you know, and our legislators, they feel the pressure too, mm-hmm. you know, from both sides. They've been regulating medical cannabis cultivation on smaller parcels that are 5 acres and under. They're very hesitant and have been over the years to touch larger kind of medical, commercial, collective, cooperative cultivation. for many reasons, economically, fear of federal preemption, but also if they are overly restrictive, the growers in Humboldt County aren't afraid to flood the chambers of the supervisors or the city council or, you know, whatever it might be. So, you know, it's a little bit of a sticky wicket without state guidance.
Sure. So you mentioned the trespass grows and some of the environmental issues with them, but let's talk about some of the legal folks. So when done without environmental awareness, cannabis growing can cause serious environmental damage and has been a constant issue in Northern California for a while. What steps has the Growers Association taken to help preserve the local environment and educate growers through the legal members, not by just trying to stamp out the trespass grows?
Well, we've done a couple of things. We've been really fortunate to be engaged with some groups that have been doing cleanup efforts. And so we've tried to get some members out into the forest to kind of experience what's going on out there. And that's a huge lesson all in itself. But also back in, I guess it was 2012, we took on a project with the Trees Foundation and some community members, and we created a best management practices guide. And that covered everything from earth moving to sediment reduction to water use and water reduction, nutrient reduction, pesticide use. So all these basic best management practices for agriculture. And we managed as a community group, right, including Emerald Growers Association, to raise enough money to distribute, at this point, almost 10,000 copies of that guidebook for free. So it's online, it has been, you know, we've been dropping it off in every, you know, nursery, garden supply store, heavy equipment rental location, and then we've also taken that and we've developed a lot of workshops around it. So, last year, we worked with another group of environmentalists, and we developed kind of an expanded workbook based on the guide, and we've been doing workshops, and we often make them free to the community. So we try to get as many people to come have this conversation as possible. And the Northern California Farmers Guide, part of what we did with that I think was really fairly brilliant and wasn't necessarily my idea, is that we decided as a group when we were putting it together to not have it be too technical and to have it kind of be more young, youthful, grower speak, right? So it
makes it more accessible to folks.
Yeah, we didn't want to charge for it and we didn't want it to be too technical or preachy. Right, we wanted it to be kind of fun and playful, and so we left it very simple, and we used words like grower on the cover. We put a big box of produce on the cover with a simple, you know, branch of flower, you know, finished flower on it, and we put them in really high traffic places, hoping that people would just pick them up thinking that it was something cool and inadvertently learn about what not to do.
So if people want to check out this Growers Guide or find out more about the Growers Association, how can they do that?
Oh, that's a great question. So the Growers Guide is on the main website for the Trees Foundation. They have done all of the technical work for us on that, which we just thank them tremendously for doing that. So you can always go to treesfoundation.org and check it out right there online. I believe it's also available through our website, but you can always email us and check out our website at emeraldgrowers.org. And that also on our website is a calendar, and there's constantly workshops coming up throughout the state where you can learn more about the guide and ask questions and get expanded education on these topics.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you for joining us today on the Gongepreneur Podcast, Kristen. Kristen Nevdahl is director of the Patient Focused Certification Program for Americans for Safe Access and co-founder of the Emerald Growers Association in Humboldt County. I'm your host, Shango Los of the Vashon Island Marijuana Entrepreneurs Alliance. Thank you for listening to Gongepreneur.
Thanks for having me.